welcome to a brand new edition of Problematic Women. I'm Virginia Allen.
And I'm Kristen Eichhammer.
Taylor Swift has a new album out, so I guess we have to talk about it?
I guess so. I mean, we don't have to.
We don't have to. We could just not talk about it, but everybody's talking about it.
Yeah, I think the moment it shows up in a Target ad, it, the world just goes crazy. Gosh. Like, everyone knows about it.
Everyone does know about it. The album, of course, is doing well because I was joking with John Pop, our producer, before we started recording. I was like, Taylor Swift could record an album of her just like baking bread in the kitchen and that would be it. And it would still sell out.
I mean, she's done that. Insane. She's done that with cookies.
Well, that's, yeah. There you go. There you have it. There you have it.
Maybe not an album, but videos.
So, Kristen, let me get your thoughts first. You've listened.
I've listened to a few songs and... Please don't hate me, everyone, but it sounds like her last album. It sounds like Folklore.
Yes, it does.
I didn't
get super Folklore vibes, but that's
really
interesting.
It just, I mean, I didn't really listen to Folklore either. It just sounded like the same song, but in different tunes.
Yep.
There wasn't that much of a difference. Just, you know, jaded Taylor, even though she's in a happy relationship, singing the same beat.
I felt the same. I think I expected more out of Taylor.
Yeah.
She's 34, and I kind of thought that we would be a little bit past like 18, 22-year-old Taylor singing about breakups and anger. And I get it. Like, it works. It sells albums. So in that sense, she's a great businesswoman, which I've talked a lot about how I admire her for that on this show. But since neither of us are that intrigued by the Taylor Swift album, do you have any recommendations for what people should listen to when they listen to Taylor Swift's album? And if they're like us and they think, wow, this is a little disappointing, what can they listen to instead, Kristen?
Oh, man. I'm locked and loaded with this. Obviously, Morgan Wallen. Don't agree with him throwing a chair off of the roof in Nashville, but I'm going to go see him soon. So
okay. Definitely, hopefully he doesn't throw a chair at you.
Honestly. Yeah. Actually, we're going to be pretty close. So maybe. But Morgan Wallen, Hardy, favorite artist right now. I actually was totally jamming to both of them while I was getting ready for work this morning and driving in. And they both put me in a good mood because, you know, it reminds me, similar to how I related to Taylor when I was younger.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, you know, chasing after the boy and heartbreak and friends, like, and fighting with friends, whatever. Hardy and Morgan Wallen do such a good job of just sending me back to, like, a good day out or a good time out on a boat with my friends, like, you know, having a beer or something like that. I will say those are probably more country-esque vibes. If you're into more of a Taylor Swift era, if you will, Walker Hayes is the way to go. Love Walker Hayes. He has the same vibe as Taylor. He's like a poppy country guy, singing about breakups, singing about, he's actually a recovering alcoholic and sings about it. It's beautiful how he does it. He's so good with words. He has a song that literally says that he's good with words. That's my hot take.
I love it. I love it. All right. Well, if you want indie, something kind of like pop indie, Mark Amber is great. And he is fun summer vibes, I would say, like upbeat.
We need those.
Good. Yeah. Good car trip. Bop to it, you know, if the kids say bop anymore, they definitely don't. I think it's coming back, though, and that word's coming back.
Yeah.
And then AJR, of course, always fun, classic, great summer music. If you want to get in touch with more of the emotional side of things, but in a healthy way.
And who doesn't?
Who doesn't? There is a great album by a Christian artist named Corey Asbury. His album that came out, I think, about a year ago is called Pioneer, but I have been listening to it nonstop recently. There's just some really, really beautiful songs that hit home about how hard life is, but they don't leave you there. They don't leave you in a depressed place. He follows through with
Taylor.
Hope. Yeah. So if you want to be a little emotional, feel a little emotional, then check out Pioneer by Corey Asbury. So happy music listening, folks.
Yeah. We gave a good variety.
We did.
I didn't realize our music was so
all
different.
Over the place.
Yeah. Love it.
Well, Kristen, what do we have queued up on today's show?
For sure. Up on today's Problematic Women, we're flipping the script and we'll actually be crowning our Problematic Woman of the Week first. Then Sarah Parshall Perry joins us to explain the latest on Title IX and what we can expect for the future of women's sports.
Whew, I am excited for these conversations. Each week on Problematic Women, we sort through the news to find those stories that are of particular interest to conservative leading or problematic women, those whose views and opinions are so often excluded by those on the so-called feminist left.
If you are a problematic woman or just someone who supports strong, independent women, please consider supporting us by leaving a review or rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and encouraging others to subscribe. It really does make a difference.
All right, let's get to it. Well, as Kristen just said, we are flipping the script today, and we are starting the show by crowning our Problematic Woman of the Week. And the crown goes to
Jennifer Say.
All right, so Jennifer Say, she's a bit of a legend. She's a former gymnast. She was actually in the movie Athlete A that exposed the acts of former USA Gymnastics physician Larry Nassar. Jennifer Say used to work at Levi's. She was very high up at Levi's. She's the author of the new book, Levi's Unbuttoned, The Woke Mob Took My Job That Gave Me My Voice. And she is the founder and CEO of the brand new athletic brand, XXXY Athletics. That is an amazing company. We're going to talk about it here in a moment. Jennifer joins us now. I figured with so much to talk about, why not just start all the way at the beginning? Where are you from?
I was born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
I grew up in and around Philadelphia, sometimes South Jersey, which is like a suburb of Philadelphia. And I started gymnastics when I was little, like 1974, 1975, okay. Right around then, right after Title IX passed. So,
okay, big time.
Yeah, I mean, it was a big time. I think, obviously, I didn't know it when I was 5 years old, but before that, I mean, gyms started popping up all around the country. There were more opportunities for little girls like me who were very active and busy, you know, up until that point. There really weren't that many opportunities for girls. There's a gazillion more now. Every sport your son can play, your daughter can play too. If your daughter wants to play ice hockey, she can do it. Back in the 70s, there weren't that many options still. Mm-hmm. And gymnastics was my choice. And then in 1976, Nadia Comaneci won the Olympics, and she was only 14. Mm. And so for little girls around the world, I think not just in the United States, we related to her.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that's I was six or seven, and you see someone who's also a little girl. I mean, she was a little girl.
Yeah.
And she just won our hearts, and all I wanted to do was gymnastics. And gymnastics, I mean, for kids, for little, it's the most fun sport in the world, honestly.
It's so cool. You see the little kids flying around, and there's that big foam pit, I remember. But
yeah, we didn't have those yet in the 70s. Those came in the 80s.
But what do you, what was your favorite part about gymnastics? Or did you have a signature move or
yeah.
routine?
Well, my favorite part when I was really little was just the flying.
Mm.
It is like flying. People look and they say, oh, it's like flying. It is. It is until it's not. It gets very difficult. I, you know, as I developed and became a strong competitor, national team member, balance beam was my best event. I was very consistent. I never fell. And that's a real asset, as you might imagine, on beam. Yeah. And, you know, despite the fact that when you watch it on TV, you don't see many falls, people do fall all the time, you know. So I really liked beam. And my sort of signature was a style. I was graceful and flexible. I was not a powerhouse. You know, I was not of the Simone Biles ilk. I was of the Nastia Lukin, who won the 2008 Olympics, you know, graceful. I struggled with some of the more power necessary skills.
Well, we know that it's an amazing sport. It also has some problems. And you experienced some of those and you talk about those in your book, Chalked Up. What was the journey like for you when you kind of began to realize, wait a second, some things are happening within the world of gymnastics that are not okay?
Yeah. I definitely didn't realize it while I was doing the sport.
Okay.
Because it was drilled into us that this was just tough coaching. the emotional, the physical abuse, you know, what anyone would call emotional and physical abuse yeah. as an outside observer. It's a closed off little world. It's kept that way on purpose. And it is completely normalized, the emotional and physical abuse. I trained on broken bones. A doctor came to the gym every 6 weeks and gave me shots of cortisone. I was a minor. There was no parental approval. We were weighed in twice daily. Our weight was announced on the loudspeaker. If you gained a quarter pound, you were called a fat pig and you were assigned an extra hour of conditioning on top of a 7-hour workout. So to me, people say, well, the line is fuzzy. I don't know. I see your mouth.
Yeah.
You know, you're wide open. To me, that's not fuzzy. That's emotional and physical abuse.
Yeah.
We were food was taken from us. You know, when we traveled for competitions, they would search our bags for food. They wouldn't let us order food in restaurants. I had a yogurt snatched out of my hand because that was too fattening after, you know, my first day of competition. So this is the kind of thing we were dealing with. I didn't realize it because, like I said, it was totally normalized. And the best, quote unquote, best coaches in the country coach this way, the Carolis being probably the most famous example. But there were others, my coaches, the Strausses, another man named Don Peters, who also was a sexual predator. And he was the national team coach in the 80s. So they set the standard. Everybody else coached accordingly, fell in line.
So the thinking was, if you want to be the best, if you want to have any shot at going to the Olympics, you shut up and just stick with the program.
Yep.
Wow.
But the coaches don't think there's anything wrong with it either. Mm-hmm. No one thinks there's anything wrong with it. I'm going back to 1984. Mm-hmm. It's only just now, I think, that people are starting to, you know, question that methodology and that style of coaching. Mm-hmm. You know, it's often said that the Carolis brought it here from Romania, but I will attest to the fact that it was here before. They just weren't as good at it as the Carolis. You know, the Carolis coached this way. They were incredibly cruel. Dominique Mociano has written about this in her book and spoken about it quite eloquently. And they did produce not just American champions, but, world champions. So then it became even more solidified as the way to coach.
Okay. So you... when did you decide, I'm going to write the book Chalked Up and I'm just going to tell all?
You know, it's so interesting. It wasn't that kind of a process. I was about 38, you know, 2 decades out from the sport, and I continued to really be haunted by it. Mm. You know, I had these terrible nightmares. I had anxiety. I was a very functional person. I had 2 children. I was a vice president, I think, at Levi's already, you know, fairly successful friends. Like, I was a normal person. I wasn't, like, rocking in the corner. But I was very aware that I had self-esteem issues. You know, despite my successes, I felt like I was a failure and a loser. And I just started to interrogate the issues myself and really think about it. And I came to understand that it was this training environment that was causing almost like a PTSD for me. You know, I'd wake up in a cold sweat in the night, anxiety, dreams that I had to get weighed in or that I had a competition and I wasn't ready. And so I sat down really just to try to make sense of it for myself. And I did promise myself I would be as honest as I could. I wasn't a writer. I wasn't sure it would get published. But I wrote it and it took the form of a book, a memoir, you know, not a journal, long form journal entry. Yeah. So I had a few friends read it and they were like, this is a book. You could sell this. And so then I had to kind of cross that Rubicon. Yeah. You know, I had to find an agent. And so I don't know. And by the time I sold it, I didn't even think about how potentially controversial some of those things were. But the thing is I was a 38-year-old. Well, I was 40 by the time it was published. I didn't have any connection to the sport. I wasn't a judge. I wasn't a coach. My kids didn't do the sport. So I didn't really care what they thought of me anymore.
Yeah. Mm. Just very honest.
Do you – so as a former athlete as well, and I'm only, you know, a couple years, maybe a decade at this point, I'm not counting anymore, out of it. But I feel the same way where it's almost, you know, the sport is your childhood trauma in some sense.
And what sport?
Soccer. Okay. So different and in a different time. But you've just launched this amazing athletic brand. I'm so, so excited. XXXY Athletics. Do you see any of what you learned as an athlete during your athletic career and then after? Do you see any of that influencing what you're creating now for not just athletes, but just for anyone who wants to move their bodies?
Yeah. Oh, there's a lot of questions in there. I want to say, having written this book and spoken out about abuse in the sport, I retain a lot of love for the sport mm-hmm. as well. I retain a lot of love and respect for children participating in sports, and little girls in particular. I think it's a tremendous opportunity, despite where my experience went a little wrong. You know, girls that participate in sports are more likely to graduate from high school. They get better grades. They're less likely to become pregnant in high school. Like, there's all these amazing things. And when sports are done right, our girls get to enjoy that. And so, you know, creating this brand, XXXY Athletics, is really, I feel like, the culmination of everything I've ever done in my life. As a child athlete, as a corporate executive that loves building brands and loves making amazing product, but also as a person who has not once but twice spoken inconvenient truths mm-hmm. that upset folks quite a bit, but mm-hmm. I kept going because I thought it was the right thing to do. So, you know, standing up, I looked around at all the athletic brands, and they all claim to stand up for women and champion women. They all do these, you know, Women's History Month campaigns, but none of them is weighing in and taking a stand to protect female athletes and female sports and spaces from males entering into those spaces, which I think puts sex-based categories and sex-based rights at risk. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important. I enjoyed the benefits of Title IX. I want my daughter to be able to enjoy the same.
Yeah. What are the concerns you see when you look at what's happening with the transgender movement, with individuals who say, actually, I'm a girl.
Right.
They're a boy. And now they're entering track,
yeah.
swimming. What are the concerns that you have?
Well, Title IX guaranteed investment and protection of girls and women's sports within a broader, you know, initiative to guarantee sex-based rights within the education system. There's a reason girls and women's sports are separate. Male and female bodies are different. Male bodies are stronger and faster. That is not a debatable fact, despite what gets printed today in quote unquote credible news sources. I mean, every human being knows this. I don't need to be a doctor to know this. So, you know, people will argue, well, it's fringe. It's not that many people. What's the difference? Just be nice. Well, there's 600 instances of male-bodied athletes taking opportunities from girls and women. And that's just now. 600, that's not small.
Yeah.
That's not a small amount. And the thing that makes me really nervous, is scared, terrified, is the denial of reality.
Hmm.
We need to live in material reality. And ideology is clouding these decisions. And there's a lie that underpins all of this. The lie being told is there's no difference between male and female bodies. If we carry that lie through to its conclusion, what happens is a decision gets made that there doesn't need to be sex-based categories. So my fear is women's sports disappears altogether. Hmm. It's not about the 600 opportunities. It's not about whatever the number is of trans athletes competing in women's. It's about that lie that is central to it, which will ultimately lead us to just, you know, disappearing sex-based categories in sports. So to me, it's the big and the small. You know, I will not further a lie. And I think it's really dangerous when we do that, mm-hmm. when we don't live in material reality anymore.
Well, and luckily, you're not doing this alone. You've picked some really amazing people. Can you tell us a little bit more about the thought process and some of the ambassadors and people you've chosen to work with?
Yeah. I think the face of this movement has really been Riley Gaines, mm-hmm. the collegiate swimmer who attended University of Kentucky and in 2002 competed against Leah Thomas, the trans athlete from University of Pennsylvania, and tied, and was told, and this is the most egregious part of the story in my mind, that she needed to stand down and let Leah accept the trophy. What?
Yeah.
And, you know, in the moment, Riley did as she was told. Mm-hmm. And I think what she thought, and she's told me this directly, that at some point, you know, cooler heads would prevail. Adults would step in. I know 22 is an adult, or however old she was at the time, 20. But she was still a student, and I think she thought sensible people would step in and say, wait, 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 we can't do this. And she realized not long after that that was not going to happen, and she was going to need to do it. And so I think it's really heroic what she's done, mm-hmm. and she's faced incredible blowback, but she's stood strong, and I think she's a great advocate and representative for female athletes. And so I knew without a question we needed Riley.
Yeah.
But we also have Paula Scanlon, who is a little lesser known, but I think is incredibly courageous and admirable. She was a swimmer on the University of Pennsylvania team with Leah Thomas and was subjected to sharing a locker room and with a male. And she was very uncomfortable. She was a victim of sexual assault as a young teen. And she went to the university and said, I'm not comfortable with this. And they told her, seek help. Mm. And they told her, if you speak out about this, you'll never get a job. I mean, essentially levying threats.
Yeah.
And you're a young person. I mean, like I said, I was 38 before I sat down and decided to call out USA Gymnastics. These are young women in their early 20s. I just think they're both so brave. And I think the point Paula makes is incredibly important, that we deserve privacy mm-hmm. and a sense of safety in our own spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And she was told to sit down and be quiet. Your needs come second. And I, as a woman and a feminist, which some of your listeners may not like that term, I've always been proud to wear it.
Yeah.
I believe in equality for us. I believe equal pay, equal rights. And part of, I think, what is necessary for us to move safely through the world is to have certain spaces where we have privacy and safety.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not just locker rooms. That's women's shelters. That's prisons. Women deserve that safety and privacy.
Yeah. And that is a fact and a truth that used to not be controversial. Everyone used to be on board with that. But we're living in this cultural moment where all of a sudden that is controversial. And I think it can be really easy for us to forget how much art, music, fashion influences the culture. So is your hope that XXXY Athletics will actually be a part of a cultural movement where we can return back to the facts of biology?
Yeah. Well, I hope it encourages and inspires courage, because 70% of Americans agree with us that women's sports and spaces should be protected, but they're too afraid because ideology has taken hold and, you know, they're afraid of being smeared as a bigot and a transphobe. And I tell people who whisper to me, well, this is crazy, this can't go on, I'm thinking I might say something, I say, be prepared. You will be called those names.
Yeah.
I don't sugarcoat it, but you need to do it, because we need to live in truth and reality. And if we do it together, it's not as scary. But yes, as I thought about what I was going to do next in my life, and I thought about what I'm good at and what I love to do, I love building brands that influence culture. And unfortunately, I'm not even going to say conservatives are the right. Anyone not on the far left has relinquished this role of culture in informing public opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone not on the far left has, you know, attempted to address it through policy, government, academia. But there's this whole world of culture out there driven by art and music and, yes, brands. And the left, far left, activist left wins there. And we can't cede that ground. You know, and so if I can make a brand that's cool with beautiful product, with elevated marketing, it sort of normalizes speaking mm-hmm. up, or it can.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my hope.
Yeah.
Also, I hope to make fantastic product that people love to wear.
Do you have a favorite product item in the line?
Well, my favorites are coming. So we launched, it's just under a month ago, and it's just a cotton basics right now. So fleece, really, really high quality fleece, sweatshirts, joggers, t-shirts with phrases, graphic tees, socks and caps and things like that. But we have performance product coming in just a couple weeks. And by that, I mean leggings, the stuff you'd wear to work out. Leggings, bike shorts, fabrics that are moisture wicking for men and women. So the legging is my favorite. It's really soft. It's the softest legging I've ever worn. Mm. It's really flattering. My designer's name is Krista. We're both obsessed with the best fabrics, the best hand, as they call it, mm-hmm. the best fit, the most flattering fit. I mean, I learned from the best at Levi's, best fitting jeans, in my opinion, in the world. And so, you know, I brought that same obsession with fit and fabric to this endeavor.
Yeah. I do. Before we let you go, I want to take a minute and ask you just to share a little bit about your new books. Your new book is Levi's Unbuttoned: The Woke Mob Took My Job But Gave Me My Voice. What is your mission with this book?
My mission with the book is sort of the same as it is with the brand. So maybe that's my life's mission, which is to inspire people to stand up and say true things. Mm. It's a really scary and dangerous world to me that we could all be cowed into silence around actual facts, things that, as you mentioned, we could have said 3 minutes ago that were true, but we're so afraid of being dragged by a loud and bullying minority that we stay quiet. So this book is an exhortation to speak up.
So powerful.
I love it. I'm certainly excited to try some of, especially the leggings. Huge fan of leggings, yes. So super excited. Can you tell us how to buy the merch, though?
Sure. The easiest way to remember is to go to thetruthfits.com. Mm.
Ooh, I love that.
That's so good.
We created, it's sort of like a vanity URL to redirect you to XXXY Athletics, but that's the easiest way to remember, thetruthfits.com. Although we just open social shopping, too, so you can also buy on Instagram.
Oh, awesome. Amazing.
You can buy on Instagram and Facebook. So if you follow us on any socials, which you should, XX_XY Athletics, you can buy there, too.
Yeah, love it. And your website is just the coolest thing ever.
Oh, thanks.
I feel empowered when I go on the website.
Awesome.
I love it.
You know, I think, look, we did a lot of the – there's a whole thing with the parallel economy now, freedom economy, and there's all these brands popping up and, you know, more power to them. A lot of them feel like second-class brands. Mm-hmm. I don't want to malign any of my fellow entrepreneurs, but my goal is to make something that feels like a world-class brand in terms of the product and the marketing that surrounds it.
Yeah.
So it makes me happy that you said you feel empowered.
Oh, yeah. Well, Jennifer, thank you on so many fronts, but thank you for the time that you have given us today and the conversation. And we're excited to wear your clothing.
Awesome. I hope you check it out. Don't wait for the leggings. Go now.
Yeah, go now. All right, well, stay tuned because up next, our friend Sarah Parshall Perry joins to continue the discussion on protecting women in female-only spaces and sports as she brings us the latest news on what on earth is happening with the Biden administration's new rule on Title IX. Stay tuned. But first, let's talk about fun spring clothing. It is spring. We're headed into summer. And of course, Kristen, that means shopping.
Duh.
Right?
Duh.
Absolutely. Shopping. So if you are looking for a great brand to buy clothes, check out Culture of Life 1972. So Culture of Life tells me that 90% of clothing brands support abortion, which that's just blows my mind. But Culture of Life 1972 is the very first pro-life clothing line. It was started by a mom and her three daughters at their kitchen table. Culture of Life 1972 has donated over $50,000 in 5 years of business as their customers shop dresses, pants, tees, jewelry, and gifts that support life from the moment of conception until life's final breath. Culture of Life 1972 is clothing with a conscience. Their clothing not only gives back to crisis pregnancy centers, but acts as a reminder to pray for all 50 states to return to a culture of life. And when you use the code PROBLEMATICWOMEN at checkout, you will save 10% off your entire order. You can check out their flash sales as well and follow them on Instagram at COL, standing for Culture of Life 1972. Again, that's COL 1972 official. And again, we are so excited that they have given us this promotion code to get 10% off using Problematic Women at checkout. Be sure to check out Culture of Life 1972. So you can start supporting life and looking super fashionable today. The Biden administration has changed the rules within Title IX. We knew that this change was coming. We've talked about it on this show. The change, though, is a little bit different than what was originally thought. But let's just do a really fast refresher. What is Title IX? Title IX acts as a protection for women's education and sports opportunities. The Education Amendment, it was set in place in 1972, and Title IX requires that there be equal opportunities for men and women in schools across the country.
And under Title IX, it's illegal for a school to offer boys 5 different sport options, but only 1 for girls. Kind of makes sense. Essentially, Title IX is creating equality among men and women in the education space. But what the Biden administration is doing with this announcement is basically saying that through changing of the definition of sex within Title IX to include gender identity and sexual orientation, They're taking that protection away for mm-hmm. women, which mm-hmm. means, you know, we could have 0 sports, honestly, for women and 10 for men. So this rule went through the public comment period. And just last week, the Biden administration issued its final rule change.
Well, here with us to break it all down is Heritage Foundation Senior Legal Fellow and our good friend, Sarah Parshall Perry. Sarah, are you alive? Are you making it?
Barely. There's a lot going on right now.
There's a lot going on. All right, well, let's talk Title IX, what we know, what these rule changes are. What has changed under Title IX, under this new rule released by the Biden administration?
Okay, so the first thing to know is that this is effective across the entire country as of August 1st for any educational institution that accepts so much as a dollar of federal funding.
Oh, wow.
Directly or indirectly.
Public or private.
Public or private, charter school, preschool program, Head Start program, vocational school, tech school, you name it. Everything from the lowest educational opportunity all the way up to the highest grad school opportunity. That's an extensive application of this. There are going to be more schools and more educational programs that are subject to this than not. So that's the way to start first. So the next rule that we're going to address is the fact that this law passed in 1972, the result of extensive deliberation between House and Senate chambers, basically trying to get the language right, trying to tweak it. 250 versions of bills.
Yeah.
It ultimately came down to one sentence. Hmm. You cannot discriminate on the basis of sex in any federally funded education program. Very simple. The Biden administration has taken that term sex that's been around for 52 years in this legislation and expanded it to include sexual orientation, pregnancy or related conditions, including termination of pregnancy, and probably the biggest impact, gender identity. Here's why that's significant, because we've enjoyed as women since 1972 educational equality in all of these programs. We've also had the benefit after 1978 with an amendment to actually play scholastic sports, K through 12, collegiate. I have a daughter who is vying for a D2 scholarship for volleyball right now. This issue is very close to my heart. This is going to upend everything that we know about educational equality. So now we're talking bathrooms, locker rooms, hotel rooms, dorm rooms, and sports teams for biological women now being opened to biological men. That is significant. That is a loss not only of what our mothers and grandmothers worked so hard to achieve, because we all recognize we've benefited from higher education. We recognize that these were significant advancements for women. 94% of women play scholastic sports either in high school or in college. And the Biden administration's done something very sort of sneaky with this. They've performed what I like to call a head fake on sports, right? So remember, there were 2 rules. One came out in April of 2022. Another came out in June of 2023. That was the sports law. And remember, after 150,000 comments, everyone hated it, the left and the right. Everyone from the ACLU and Human Rights Campaign to conservative organizations like ours. That's because it put schools, universities to an untenable balancing test. You can't exclude trans athletes unless you have a legitimate government educational objective. But you can't count safety or equality in K through 12, but you can maybe count it in college. And watching your furrowed brow, it was just as much of a bureaucratic nightmare as everyone said. So they went, all right, we're going to shelve the athletics rule. They've publicly represented that sports are not included. But let me tell you, the word athletics appears 31 times in the 1,500-page regulation. They include all, quote, extracurricular activities as being under this non-discrimination provision. And in a case coming out of the Fourth Circuit, BPJ versus West Virginia, they submitted a brief. The Department of Justice submitted a brief saying it is our official position as the government that Title IX includes the opportunity for trans athletes to play on girls' teams, which was exactly the issue in the BPJ case. So you can say one thing, Department of Education, but your actions and your fine print indicate something else. So sports are definitely included. Some people are saying, well, housing's not included, dorms are not included. The standard is more than de minimis harm. So if you're a trans-identified male and you want to sleep in the women's dorm rooms, you want a female bunkmate, all you have to do is go to the administration and say, this would harm my feelings and I feel excluded and I really need to be with the biological women in this space. And the Department of Education, their civil rights office would say, yeah, that individual proved de minimis harm. Wow. So all of the things that we were afraid of being affected are 100% affected. What it's also going to do, and this is something that I think is almost a sort of poison pill that not a lot of people are talking about. It talks about harassment being oftentimes sort of sufficient through a misgendering or a preferred pronoun use failure. In other words, you can now file a complaint if someone refuses to use your preferred pronouns or misgenders you. That is patently unconstitutional. We just saw in the last term the 303 Creative versus Alenis case. That was precisely what was at issue with Lori Smith. She said, listen, I don't want to be compelled to communicate a message that's against my beliefs. And the Supreme Court, of course, naturally said, yes, the First Amendment protects not just you not having to say what you want, but also from being forced to say what you don't want. It gives you both opportunities. So I think that is a significant development that not a lot of people are paying very close attention to. And you know what it's also going to do is it's going to allow schools to unilaterally, without question, accept the gender identity of minor children without any consult with the parents. Now, we've already seen a proliferation of these gender support confidentiality policies. Nearly 11 million children in the United States are subject to these policies in the school in which they're enrolled. 11 million kids. So this basically gives the stamp of approval from the Biden administration on what's being done in public schools across the country anyway. So to say that this is a catastrophic reimagining of American education is not an overstatement. I think it's very accurate.
I have so many thoughts, but I think what I want to get at here is, you know, Biden, the Biden administration, press, people that were advocating for this change have said countless times, this would not affect women's sports. This would not affect women's sports. You just walked us through how it definitely 31 times you said was in the bill.
Exactly.
So first question, how are you, you know, negating that? How are you saying, like, what's the one liner that people can say, no, that's wrong? And what does this mean for the future of women's sports?
Well, I got to tell you, if this rule is not enjoined during federal litigation. Remember, we got a short window, 60 legislative days for Congress to bring a challenge and to say, okay, 2/3 of us are going to downvote this rule. That unfortunately goes to the president's desk, and we already know what he's going to do. He'll veto it. But it starts the clock tolling, and it gives the federal litigators an opportunity to get their complaints in order, to start drafting their pleadings. And I will tell you, I am privy to information that 4 lawsuits are already in the works.
Okay.
So it is very possible that this rule will be enjoined, which is good news because it is so patently illegal. I've told people it's unconstitutional, a violation of administrative law, and a violation of civil rights law. That being said, if you had to distill it down and say, well, what happens with sports? First of all, the regulation contains the term athletics, and it contains the term all extracurricular activities. So if you think there's a single school out there that's going to deny a trans-identified male's opportunity to run on the women's track team, they're not going to want to put their federal funding on the line. Mm-hmm. And if gender identity applies to every other aspect of education, the fact that athletics are somehow not included, I think, is disingenuous on the part of the administration.
Yeah. The next time that we have a conservative president in office, is it simple to reverse this? This has been a long process that we've been talking about for over a year on this show, the rulemaking process and the review.
Over two years.
Could this be undone easily, or are we looking at a very long road to flip this back to say, wait, no. Sex means biological men and women and does not include gender identity.
So every rule that is created by every federal agency has to be formally revoked, and then it has to be replaced with a new rule.
Okay.
So the first thing that another president could do is issue an executive order basically saying, in all, exactly as Biden did, remember, day one of the administration, it was, hey, all federal agencies, sex now means sexual orientation and gender identity. And that, I mean, it spread like a plague. Mm-hmm. HHS, HUD, DOJ, Department of Education. That would be the first thing to do as a new president. We are instructing you to interpret the text of your anti-discrimination provisions according to biological distinctions between male and female as Congress intended. And then it would have to be followed with something called informal guidance from the Department of Education saying specifically, okay, and now in case you're wondering, Title IX for this administration means male and female. Gender identity, sexual orientation, not included categories because Congress didn't amend Title IX to include those categories. And it actually amended Title IX twice, but never at any point did anyone go, man, maybe we got the term sex wrong. Like maybe we really meant gender identity back in like, you know, the women's liberation movement. That seems highly untenable to me. But it would be executive order, it'd be informal guidance, and then the next administration will have their work cut out for them. They're going to have to start from scratch. And I went through a previous Title IX process. It's exhausting. You get to consider every single comment that comes through the portal. You are bound by law to review, remake, do a cost analysis, and recreate.
Wow. And so earlier, I kind of find it ironic that this is how they justified it. You said the trans person that wants to be in the same room as a woman wants, but specifies biological woman. Like, that's kind of funny and ironic to me. That biological woman, uncomfortable, doesn't want it.
Right.
Like, what happens to her?
So that's a great question. And this is the question I don't think that the Biden administration is prepared to wrestle with.
No.
You will have now competing complaints under Title IX, right? So you're going to have an athlete who feels discriminated against because she's got a male on her team who's kicked her off, who's won the scholarship she was in the running for, who gets her place on the roster eliminated. And then on the other side, you're going to have complaints from trans-identified males saying, well, I wasn't allowed to compete on the women's sports team. How do you square those two issues? If sex also includes sexual orientation and gender identity, who trumps, right?
Yeah.
If you've got the women who are saying, this was passed for us to guarantee the absence of discrimination, to provide us equal educational opportunity. I could not have gone to law school without Title IX because it opened up graduate programs. Mm-hmm. My daughter could not be vying for a college sports scholarship because she is benefiting from Title IX. What happens when these two come to a loggerhead? I think the Biden administration is going to have its work cut out for it.
NCAA, if that was any, you know, any preview to this, we know what's going to happen.
That's exactly
right? That's why Riley Gaines is Riley Gaines.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's it.
So August 1st is supposed to take effect.
Yep.
We already know there's going to be lawsuits.
Yep.
So we're going to watch this play out. You're going to stay busy, Sarah.
Yes, I am.
Fighting the good fight.
Thank you for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, you guys.
Well, with that, that's going to do it for this week's edition of Problematic Women.
Join us next Thursday morning for a brand new edition. And in the meantime, please subscribe and share.
As conservatives, we need your support in the podcast world. So go ahead, make sure that you leave us a 5-star rating and review. We're across all podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play. We love hearing your feedback.
And don't be discouraged by the Title IX ruling. Keep sporting those sports. We got this. Have a great week, guys.
Problematic Women is brought to you by more than 500,000 members of the Heritage Foundation.
It is a product of the Daily Signal, produced by Lauren Evans and Virginia Allen. And be sure to follow Problematic Women on Instagram.
We produce Problematic Women in remembrance of our dear friend and former co-host, Bree Payton.